Australian True Crime. The live show is coming.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
The producers of this podcast recognise the traditional owners of the land on which it's recorded. They pay respect to the Aboriginal elders past, present, and those emerging.
The following podcast contains content of a graphic, violent nature and is not suitable for children.
To be honest, she's actually trying anyway. Like, since this fight has been spoken about, she pushed it aside. They put in exemption requests to fight someone else. They don't want to fight me. So now the fight's happening and she's just trying to, anything she can do to either upset me or to get out of the fight still, I would assume.
That's Shotgun Shannon, also known as Shannon O'Connell. She's Australia's preeminent female boxer and she's off to the UK shortly to fight Ebony Bridges for the world bantamweight title. Now look, Ebony's been talking some shit about Shannon. To be fair, Shannon's talked a bit of shit about Ebony too, but that's boxing, right? One thing that's absolutely true though is that Shannon's toughest opponent is her childhood. She fights it every day, as do her two brothers, with varying degrees of success. We were introduced to Shannon by a previous guest, Russell Manser, from The Voice of a Survivor. He likes to say that boxing has saved more lives than church, and Shannon is definitely one of them. What do you think life was like for you up until the age of two? You lost your dad at two, and it seems to me, from the little that I've been able to learn about you, it seems to me that everything changed at that point. What do you think? What have you gleaned life was like before that point, though?
Look, my mum lived a troubled life. Like, she was gang raped when she was 15. I fell pregnant. And I mean, she had I don't know whether she miscarried or had an abortion, but I mean, she never had a great life. There was always something. She was just that person that there was always something. My mum was married before my dad. She had I've got two older brothers that aren't my dad's, and he was not so nice to her. It was horrible to her. So me and my brother, who has a different dad, we're only 18 months apart. So I think it all happened really quickly for her, and it was like he was her knight in shining armor. And I do believe, I don't know facts, but I do believe that she wasn't overly nice to him. She loved him and she wanted him, but she didn't know how to accept that he was a good person because she'd never had good people in her life. Even my grandparents, her parents, they were divorced and there was a lot of abuse there. And my nan was a beautiful woman, but they're all that bit crazy. There's a bit of craziness in that whole side of the family. She just grew up not knowing how to accept happiness. And my dad was this perfect human. And so she didn't know how to accept him. And so she is like, she had him, but she pushed him away.
Yeah. And then, so what happened? How'd she lose your dad?
My dad was a speedway rider. So he died on the track. I actually found out a lot of years later that they must have busted up. My mum was sleeping with someone else and it happened to be someone else that was a speedway rider. And he pulled out of the race because my dad found out. He pulled out of the race and the guy that stepped into his spot for that race that my dad died in is the guy that caused the accident. I mean, didn't cause the accident, but he was an inexperienced rider. So the guy that filled in for the guy that my mum was sleeping with caused the accident. So I guess there was a lot of guilt everyone was living with. It was hard to deal with for everyone. I mean, even the guy that caused the accident actually reached out to me maybe 10 years ago and he was like scared to reach out to me. But I mean, I told him it wasn't his fault, like, you know. But yeah, the guy that pulled out, I think, hung himself.
Oh, babe. God, what a tragedy. From your earliest memory, there's a lot of tragedy going around.
Yeah, well, I actually didn't know about that side. I mean, there's probably still a whole bunch of other stories I don't really know the ins and outs of, but I only found that out maybe 10 years ago.
But there must have been a sort of a shadow of tragedy that you felt.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my mum sort of, I guess, played the whole, her husband of a perfect marriage died in a speedway accident in front of her eyes. Like, she was there. My grandparents were also there. They all saw it. They were all a very big part of the speedway in Adelaide. And they all witnessed my dad's accident.
Gosh, that's awful. So then your early childhood, you know, we know now and we talk a lot about how much of our personalities are formed in those first 5 to 7 years by the environments that we're living in. So describe that for us. What was the environment you were in those years?
It wasn't a great one. I grew up, there was people in and out of our house. My mum was, she was a mess. She was, I think, to start with, she turned to alcohol, then, you know, pretty much anything she could get her hands on to help her forget. She ended up becoming a heroin addict, and also she used to take a lot of sleeping pills and all those, that, like, literally everything, anything she could get her hands on. So we had a lot of people in and out of our house that should never have been there. There was a family at the speedway and they sort of latched on and owned her. Once those kind of people are in your life, it's really hard to get rid of them. I mean, not that she was strong enough to really even do that, but yeah, they were pretty much in and out of our house all the time, like looking for drugs. Like, one of them was in jail. He was in and out of jail, but they used to come and they were crazy. They, like, our house was kind of like, I guess you could say it was a party house, but it wasn't much of a party because my mum was always passed out. I guess, you know, when people say, oh, drug addiction, to me, there's different types of drug addictions. Like, you could be a drug addict and still go to work every day. You could be a drug addict and enjoy it. My mum was a drug addict because she was trying to make her life go away.
Yeah.
Like, she was hiding her pain.
Yeah. She wanted to be out of it, literally out of it.
Yeah. I remember one time we moved to a new house and she went down to the corner store, probably to buy cigarettes or something, and she was that person that they just flocked to. And straight away, we're in a new suburb. Never been there. Someone walked up to her and asked her, do you know where I can get a hit? I guess she was my mum. I seen her every day, but to other people, you could just look at her and know she was a junkie. My oldest brother was also, he was 5 years older than me, and he was not hanging around the best crowd. getting in trouble, and our house was the place that they all went. So there was a lot of younger, like teenagers as well, around our house.
Any youth detention for your brothers or jail time?
Yeah, my oldest brother did a little bit of youth detention. Probably not as much as he should have. He got away with it.
But honestly, it's probably to be expected given his childhood, really.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, everything, I sort of like, I'm the type of person that tries to look at it from other people's point of views. And I think most of the things that I went through as a younger age, he was older. Like, I mean, there was one time people tried to break into our house looking for drugs and my mum got stabbed. She went outside, idiot, went outside with her own little pocket knife and got stabbed with her own knife. And my brother at the age of 10 had to pull the knife out of her stomach. The ambulance said if he didn't do that, she would have died. So I think for me, obviously it was horrible, but he had to pull a knife out of his mum. Like, yeah. And he also was a lot older when my dad died. So he had that more of a relationship with my dad where he's got real memories. Most of my memories are stories that people have told me.
Yeah, no, I look at your brother's situation from the perspective of almost like from an academic perspective. And I think, yeah, I'd be shocked if he hadn't done some time.
Yeah. Well, as an adult, he's doing pretty good. But, you know, as a teenager, from the age of about 13 through to about 16, 17, he was in trouble. There was part of this family that sort of were in and out of our house. I remember one time they knocked on our door, a guy and a girl, they were brother and sister, and they were looking for drugs. And the way they were back then, I guess it's a little different to the way like bikies are now. They didn't really do much in front of kids and elderly. So I answered the door and they said, go upstairs. So I remember I was about 6 hiding in a cupboard and all I could hear was my mum screaming because they were trying to find Rohypnol, of all things. And she didn't have any, or she was telling them she didn't have any. So they pretty much trashed her house and bashed her until they were able to find something. And my mum later blamed me because she basically said, if you didn't go and hide upstairs, they wouldn't have done it. That same guy sexually abused me probably about a year later. To be honest, I don't even know. Like, it was horrible. I was in my mum's bed. I just remember just laying there and just like tense as anything and just go away, go away. Like my eyes were shut. Like everything, I was just like stiff. Yeah, it wasn't nice. And it was that same family.
Were there any adults around who were noticing and trying to intervene? Your grandparents, any aunts and uncles? Neighbors, teachers.
My grandparents were like my saviors. That I'm sure if it wasn't for them, I'd be either dead or in jail myself. Mm. But they didn't know that. No one knew that because the way we were all raised is my brothers. Because especially for me, because I didn't have my dad. My brothers were so protective of me, and I knew that if they knew what happened, I mean, it only happened the once. But if they knew what had happened, that they would have tried to protect me, and I knew that they would get hurt. So I didn't tell anyone, not a single person. It's only been like really the last few years that I've spoken out about it at all. And I mean, I would have been 8 or 9 years old and my brothers didn't know because they would have tried to protect me and they would have got hurt.
So you were protecting them.
Yeah. So we've got this whole big protection thing that it ended up being just one big secret. But to me, I mean, it was, my brothers probably could, one of them could have ended up dead. I mean, if someone's hurting their little sister and what are they going to do? Like one of them would have been, if I was 8, he was 10, the other one was 13. And it was real, like my mum was so not in control that she wouldn't have been able to do anything herself.
Yeah.
People say to me now, like, was that hard? But as weird as it is, I just made it go away. I feel like sometimes, I mean, I'm not saying that anyone should suppress anything like that, but sometimes I think maybe if I dealt with it, I would have had to relive it so much more. Whereas I just literally made it go away. I've more had to relive it now.
Yeah, that's the issue, isn't it? I suppose now we would say to kids, tell a teacher, tell your grandparents. I mean, what year are we talking? I don't know how old you are. You look very young, but you're also very healthy. So I don't know what
it would have been about 1990.
So it doesn't seem like long ago, but still, you know, did you feel, and you probably weren't going to school a lot, were you?
No, I was that kid that all the other parents felt sorry for and picked up to take places. And I moved to school. We moved houses a lot to a point where I used to ride my bike for an hour to get to school because I didn't want to move schools anymore. And so I did go, not enough. But then high school was where it was probably a bigger problem because my mum was so scared at times to be alone that I actually used to have to run away from home to go to school. And she used to chase me to the bus stop. I wasn't running away from home to do anything bad. I was wanting to go to school, but she was so scared of being alone. Like I went on 2 school camps and both times I had to come home early because she tried to commit suicide.
Oh, babe.
At that point, I just think it wasn't even suicide. It was a cry for help because, you know, nobody that is really wanting to kill themselves does it and then rings the hospital and says, oh, if I take this, how long would it take to kill me? Well, they obviously trace the call and send an ambulance out. And that's what she did both times. Whereas the time when she did die, she didn't contact anyone.
And how old were you when she did die?
23. I was living with my mum right up. Like I was sort of in and out a lot from the age of 13 because I'd go to my grandparents and I was in high school then. I was starting to get in trouble and do all the wrong things. And they were a bit more strict. So every time they got strict on me or if I got in trouble and it wasn't okay with them, I'd just go back to my mum's and I could do whatever I wanted there. And then when it got too much, I'd run away and I'd ring my pop. They had a reverse charges phone number for me. So I'd ring him and he'd come and pick me up. And I'd sort of went between, I mean, I did it. I did what a teenage girl does. I went between wherever was easiest for a while. Yeah. And then by the age of 15, I stayed with my grandparents. I then at one point I was staying at my cousin's house. And so I was at her house for a week and my grandparents for a week. And then by 18, I was living on my own.
You were obviously a lovable kid, even though you went through your naughty phase, because for family to say yes every time, take the charges, come and pick you up, you know, you were obviously still lovable and still, you know, a good person.
I don't know about that. I don't know how lovable I was, but I do know that my grandparents are saints and I was my dad's only child. So they held on to me because that was what they had left of their son that died. I mean, I didn't do anything bad with my grandparents. I still to this day don't even swear in front of my pop's passed now, but I don't even swear in front of my nan. But I probably could have put them through a lot and they would have been there regardless. My grandparents were saints. I finished year 11 and then I dropped out. I left year 11 into a job. Like I was never doing nothing.
I mean, a kid in your circumstances, it's amazing that you got that far. It really is, you know?
Yeah.
And also, I mean, did the school ever intervene? Because I think and I hope, and I know it doesn't happen everywhere, but these days you see a kid, you know, not attending, and they tend to there's some wellness coordinator somewhere who goes, oi, what's happening? Because now they get it that there's an issue. There are broader issues going on when a kid is struggling like that. But in those days, of course, they didn't think that way.
Well, they didn't, but also I hit it pretty well. I think I was just, I mean, I'm the first to admit I was a shit kid at school. I was that kid that was getting suspended, getting internally suspended, swearing at the teachers.
That's what I mean. There's reasons for that. It's never, kids aren't bad. There's reasons.
Yeah, but I don't think the teachers really cared too much about what was going on with me. They just get rid of her.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I didn't talk to my mum for a long time. And when my older son, he was 4 months old, and I was asked to go back to work. And just randomly out of the blue, I asked my mum to come up to Queensland and help me look after him because she was the only person that I knew that could just up and go. She'd at that point never even been on a plane in her life. So she came up and she helped me look after him. I didn't know at the time. She told me she was clean. So I didn't know at the time that she was going through some really bad withdrawals. To me, now I can say how much of a strong woman she was, because she was looking after someone else's kid that he probably cried all day until I got home. And she was going through some really bad heroin withdrawals. My son, he's a spitting image of my dad. And I think that for my mum, she looked at him and thought, my dad was back. So it was 4 months after that that she killed herself. And I think for her, I mean, it might sound, it's just my way of, I guess, being okay with it. For her, her meeting Cooper was, all right, I can go now. But I didn't talk to her for a long time before that. And my last conversation with her was having a go at it. She rang me because, I don't know, she did something. My brother was in the Philippines, and he was living with her, and something happened. Someone stole his car and it crashed. And I was like, literally my last words to my mom were, for fuck's sake, why do you always ring me with a problem? And I hung up on her, and that was my last words with her. And then I found out that, you know, obviously she was ringing my brother in the Philippines, and he was like, not happy because something happened to his car. So I think all of us had a go at her at some point. And then my oldest brother, he went around to her house. He'd heard from her and then didn't hear from her for a couple of days. And I think she asked him something, if he could bring her around something, and he didn't. He was like, yeah, whatever. And he went there, and I think he went and brought her food or something, and the door was unlocked, and he walked in and found her dead with a needle in her arm. She was a heroin addict for a long time, like 20 years. She knew what she was doing. And it was the one time that she'd done it and not rang anyone. Her time was up, and she wanted to be gone. So the same brother that pulled a knife out of her stomach when he was 10 years old found her dead. I went through a lot of like depression myself, and a lot of that was me realizing that I'm a lot like my mother. Obviously, you know, I'm not a drug addict, but I've got this addiction towards boxing and things like that. So I went through a stage where I thought, are my kids going without, you know, fun time with me and McDonald's and you know, all the things that normal kids do because of my boxing? And am I turning out to be everything that I hated about my own mum? I mean, I don't hate my mum, but I hated things about her. And because she was dead, and I couldn't then tell her that I was sorry for all the hate that I'd given her and that I didn't forgive her for the things that she did, that put me into my own depression. And then I started thinking, am I now passing it on? Are my kids going to end up where I am because I'm doing what my mum did, and then I'm doing it to them? And how am I going to break this cycle? And my only theory with that at the time was, I'm just going to take my own life. And I mean, I tried. That's, to me, when people say depression's like weak, it's not. There's a whole, like, I understand depression, and I really didn't until I'd went through it myself. And it made me feel worse than for not trying to help my mum more. I mean, I don't believe I could have done anything to help her, but, you know, she wasn't here for me to say, I understand. And that was hard for me to deal with. I really, and that's the thing that I think about depression, is you're in another state of mind that people just don't understand. Like, I honestly, like, I actually did. I was in an induced coma for 3 days.
You're numb. You're kind of emotionally numb, if anything. It's like you're not thinking clearly.
But I thought that I was, and I clearly was thinking my kids are better off without me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I really believed that. Now, their dad is a moron. So for me to think that, I was messed up.
Exactly. Exactly.
It was actually my brother who rang me from jail. My brother, that's just a little bit older than me, rang me after I'd done it. And he said, how do you think your Cooper, is my son, is going to live his life knowing that his mum didn't care enough about him to stick around? Whereas I was thinking, he's going to live a better life if I'm not here to pull him down. And when my brother said that to me, I went, oh, shit. Like, he's not just going to wake up the next day going, oh, well, it's a new life now. Like, his mum took her own life and didn't care about him enough to stick around and teach him to do the right things. And since that day of my brother saying that, never thought about it again in my life.
Or worse yet, you know, Cooper, maybe however many years in the future, thinking, oh, I should have been nicer to mum.
Yeah. Or my grandma did it, my mum did it, my turn.
Having the same feelings as you were having feelings of guilt. How are your brothers? How are they going now?
My oldest brother, he's doing really good. He's not even on social media, so
excellent.
He doesn't get caught up in all that sort of life. He's just being him. My other brother is in jail.
Okay. Has he got much to serve?
Not sure. He hasn't been sentenced yet. I really struggle with my brother because, being the older brother, he's the fixer. He wants me to think that he's perfect and, you know, oh, what's wrong? Like, he'll ring me from jail and try and find my problems and solve them. And I'm like, yeah, no. He's struggling, but he won't admit that to me. I mean,
poor bugger.
He became a drug addict in jail. Before that, he was clean. And I think that's what jail does to you, but it's taken over his life. Now, his son has muscular dystrophy and he struggles with that, but he's obviously struggling to see the fact that it get your shit together, because then you can spend some time with your son that's struggling rather than being away from him. And then, you know, he's obviously not sure what his lifespan's going to be. So he's struggling, but he just won't let me help him. He reached out to me once and I flew to Thailand and spent some time with him. But even then it was just, oh, no, I'm good, I'm good, I'm good. Well, no, you're not. But you can't have that argument with your older brother because they're always right.
Well, I guess he doesn't know how to be cared for because he wasn't cared for as a child. What you're talking about is so important because you're talking about the generational trap.
Yeah.
The generational trap of poverty, the psychological impact of these neighborhoods, these places, and it's not their fault. It's about the lack of support for women like your mum, the authorities not stepping in, the school, the doctor, all of those people not stepping in for kids like you and your brothers. And so, of course, your brothers end up in jail. And of course, you end up with depression years later, even though you have worked so hard to change your life, to give your kids a different life. What you have to talk about is so important. And I'm so glad that you obviously didn't take your life like your mum.
Yeah, I think for me, my biggest fear is failure. And I think that's why I lived for so long, so much of my life just trying to not fail. And it was only a year ago that I went, actually, the only way I can fail is by doing something stupid like that. That's the only, like, other than that, like, I'm not killing it, but I put my kids through a good school. I've got a mortgage. I own my car. Like, all those things my mum never did. So I am breaking the cycle. It just took a long time for me to realise that I was doing that.
Babes, you're doing things most people are not doing. Like, you're really honestly killing it. Like, not even just compared to your mum. Like, you're really doing such a great job.
it's funny because something, little things that I've done for my kids, like they went to a private primary school and it was the same school from prep to year seven. Yeah. And that to me, that made me proud. For other people, it's like, big deal. Yeah. That made me proud. Like my son had braces, like my daughter's got braces now. My son had braces and I went, like, this is a proud moment for me. My mum would never have taken me to the dentist.
I know, just to get them to the dentist every year. Or, yeah, I know what you mean, those little things, hey.
Like I was excited to pay $6,000 for these braces.
Russell Manser, who, you know, brought you to us, his saying is, boxing has saved more lives than Jesus. So I guess you're one of them.
100% I'm one of them. Like 100,000,000% I'm one of them. If I didn't find boxing, I wouldn't like to think where I'd be at. I definitely wouldn't have my three beautiful children. I'd still be in Adelaide and I'd probably be dead or in jail.
So explain that to us. Most of us don't understand that. Some people hate boxing. Some people think it's just, you know, punching on. Explain to us what it was that first captured your imagination and made you love it.
Well, my grandparents actually took me down to the local boxing gym near their house. And the guy that owned that gym, Terry Fox, he used to race speedway with my dad. So obviously, as soon as I walked in the door, he was open arms, come in. Like, you know, I think he even nearly cried. I guess boxing, majority of people that come that are successful in boxing have had bad stories because it's hard. Boxing's hard. And you've got to go through, you've got to have that toughness and that dig your heels in kind of grit to get through it. And I guess for me, it was the challenge of it, how hard it was. And I mean, not everybody looks at it that way. Some people get through and especially these days, I think it's very different. But for me, I'm a very old school, like the way I train. And to me, it's how hard it was, is how it got me addicted, is because it was so challenging. And for me, everything about my life was so challenging. So I was drawn to it.
I can see your discipline to look at you, whereas you grew up in such an undisciplined environment. You grew up in a schmozzle, in a mess, whereas I can look at you and everything about you is tight, disciplined.
Yeah.
I can see you're on top of life.
Yeah, I guess that I never really thought of it that way, but you're definitely right. It is. It's a control thing. I'm in control. You might understand, but a lot of people look at me like I'm insane when I say this, but the way I train, it's almost like my form of self-harm. Obviously, I like to be healthy. I am healthy. But it's more like I'm punishing myself, and it's my way of coping is by inflicting pain on myself. And me doing that is training, because I really do. Some people say I train insane. I get something in my head and I have to do it, or I have to beat it. And it's not even about being competitive against someone else. It's about being competitive against myself and punishing myself and seeing how far I can push myself. And it's not even really a form of, I don't want to be a drug addict, so I'm going to exercise. That's my addiction. Probably in the last 12 months, I've stopped living such a negative, everything that drives me is hate and anger. So I actually like myself now. So there's no need to harm myself. But probably for majority of I've nearly been boxing for 20 years. So probably about 19 of those years was self-harm.
What changed in the last 12 months? That's quite recent.
Just over a year ago, I fought, and it was a fight that I didn't want to fight. There was a lot of trust issues came up with my current team in this prep for this fight. And I still fought and I won. And after that, I injured myself in the fight and I had quite a major surgery. So it sort of gave me that point to step back. And I had a falling out with my old team, and someone actually said to me, "Why don't you ring Glenn Jennings?" And I went, because my last name's not Zoo, because he manages the Zoo Boys. He was in with Costa in his career, Costa Zoo, and then he manages Tim and Nikita. I mean, Tim is, I would say, the biggest name in Australian boxing right now. I mean, he's only ever managed those three boys, and my last name is not Zoo. So when someone said to me, "Give Glenn Jennings a ring," I was like, "Why? Well, you don't want to talk to me." And then I went, "You know what? Stuff it. I'm just going to, all he can do is say no." So I rang him, and straight away, I didn't know that he had three daughters. I didn't really know much about him at all. But straight away, he asked me a few questions, and he was completely shocked at my answers about, you know, support, sponsorship, what I was getting paid, anything like that. And he just straight away, "Yeah, we're going to do this because you deserve it." He spoke to Matt Rose, who's No Limit Boxing, and they said, "Yep, definitely, if you want her part of the team, she's part of the team. And I think he was out to dinner with Tim and Tim said, yep, do it. And yeah, it's been since November last year, everything has just, my whole world has just changed. Everything that Glenn has done, it's been amazing. And his daughters are great to me. I met his wife recently. She's a beautiful lady. You know, they're just good people. When I meet people like that, and also a few years ago, I met Lyndon Hosking, who has been a great support as well. And, you know, he helped me start up my own gym and things like that. And when I've met people like that, there's not many people like that left in the world, but let alone boxing. It's just made me go, there are still people out here that remind me of what I've been told my dad was like.
Do you see a next thing for you?
I'd love to be able to help struggling youth. Like I've always said right from the start, if I can tell my story or share my story and help just save one person's life, then everything that I went through was worth it because I got through it. So, you know, I was able to save my own life. So if I could help just save one person's life, and I mean, even having my own gym, I had a lot of people that I didn't even know were going through some struggles and messaged me and said, you know, I was on the verge of suicide and having that gym there helped me. And I'm not here to motivate everyone. I really don't care if some people don't like me. I'm so real that I'm not fake. I don't have a fake bone in my body. I can't be fake. If you don't like me, that's fine. But the people that will like me and draw to me are the people that have struggled, and they're the people I want to help. I actually like myself now. I've lived this life full of proving everyone wrong, and I'm not my mum, and I'm not this, and I'm gonna make my dad's name proud again because my mum dragged it through the dirt. And it's in the last 12 months I've realized that I've done that. So now I'm doing it for me, and I actually, I'm happy with who I am for the first time probably in my life.
Thank you to our guest, Shannon O'Connell, Shotgun Shannon. She fights Ebony Bridges for the world bantamweight title in Leeds on December 10. You can send her a good luck voicemail message via our Facebook page or the link in the show notes, and we'll definitely pass it on. And thank you for downloading this episode of Australian True Crime, recorded at a Hub Australia media studio, hubaustralia.com. Find the workspace that's right for you.
This has been another Smart Fella production in conjunction with the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Australian True Crime. The live show is coming.